Hey, everybody. My name is Ross James, and this is Songs That Saved Me podcast. So I've had this idea to do this podcast for a long time, and I've kind of been building up a few episodes with a lot of my friends, and the idea is sort of discuss a few songs that have shaped your life in certain ways or certain parts of your life or gotten you through some really hard times. And with everything that's going on in the world right now, it seemed fitting to really start putting this material out, this content out, and sharing some of these stories with everybody. And I just spoke with guitar player Scott Metzger from the band Joe Russo's Almost Dead and several other projects, including his group Wolf. And we spoke over the weekend. He's, you know, in his Brooklyn apartment and quarantined there pretty much. And we're all kind of in the same boat everywhere in the world right now. And it just seemed fitting to make this the first episode. And there's a bunch more coming down the pipe. And I'm hoping to be able to speak with even more friends, you know, as we're all kind of stuck at home looking to connect with people. So I hope you enjoy our conversation and some really great performances from Scott. And stay tuned for more episodes of Songs That Saved Me coming real soon. All right, well, I'm here with my buddy Scott Metzger from, he plays in the band J-Rad, Joe Russo's Almost Dead, and he's got his own project called Wolf, which I'm a big fan of. And he's talking to me today from his apartment, quarantined in Brooklyn. How you doing, man?
Hey, Ross. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, you too.
Strange days.
Yeah, I'll say, man. It's crazy. Lots of opportunity to practice and listen to records, though, that's for sure. I was listening to the Wolf record yesterday morning.
It's a feel-good record. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, I love it, man. Puts me in a good, it's a good morning record, morning coffee record. For those that haven't heard it, it's called 1-800-WOLF and highly recommend it. I mean, I normally would ask you what you got coming up, what kind of shows you're doing, but it's really kind of a moot point.
We could skip that part.
Yeah. I mean, are you planning on doing, you have any interest in doing any sort of live streams or anything during this time? And
to be determined. So
yeah,
far.
Cool.
I'm not jumping on the opportunity to do anything like that, mainly because I'm not nearly as tech savvy as a lot of my peers. And so.
Well, if people wanted to stay tuned, they could follow you on Instagram, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it's Scotty Metz, ScottyMetz. Is that right?
Yep. That's it.
Cool. So yeah. Well, when I proposed this podcast idea to you, and you said you want to do it, I was really excited to get to talk with you. What was one of the first songs maybe that popped into your head as something that had a big impact on you or affected you when you were going through something heavy?
Yeah, well, the first song that I chose is by the Ramones, and it's a song called I Believe in Miracles.
Nice.
which by the Ramones standards, it's pretty pedestrian lyric-wise. It's right down the middle. And it's also one of the only Ramones songs that has a guitar solo.
Right.
As caveman as it is, you know, I think there's four notes in the whole solo, which is probably part of the reason why I chose it too, yeah. Because the Ramones made being in a band and being a part of something seem very attainable. At a time in my life when I needed to feel a part of something.
How old were you?
Well, the Ramones were the first concert I ever bought a ticket to.
Oh, nice.
Right? City Gardens in Trenton, New Jersey, 1993. I guess I would have been in like the 9th or 10th grade.
Uh-huh.
And Mudhoney opened.
Whoa.
And the experience, I mean, I remember that gig like it was last week. Honestly, you know, they came out. Madani played, and they were awesome, and I wasn't as familiar with them at the time. And then they changed over the stage, and the lights all went out, and smoke machines came on, and nothing but blue lights came on, and they started blasting the theme from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly at, like, you know, ear-piercing volumes. And I actually have goosebumps sitting here just talking about that moment. And then they came out, and they just, like, beelined their instruments. There was no showbiz at all. They didn't even, like, acknowledge that the crowd was there. Yeah. And CJ, the bass player at the time, you know, he picked up the bass, and he was the one who was counting off all the tunes. He just went, 1, 2, 3, 4. And they went right into Blitzkrieg Bop. Uh-huh. And that, I went home from that night. It sounds so corny, but I went home from that night being like, I'm going to be in a band for my life. Like, that's it.
So it was, you were in the beginning of high school. I mean, had you been playing for a while before that? Or
not really. And I think that that's part of why this song had such a big impact on me at the time, because it was so, like I said, it's, you know, it ain't Jethro Tull, you know? Like, if you just know one shape on the guitar, you can play all the Ramones songs.
Totally.
So it did seem attainable. But, you know, more to the point of what we're talking about, the sense of community. I grew up in a town that was, I can't overemphasize how small of a town it was. I went to the public high school, and I graduated with, I think it was 34 kids in a class. So,
wow,
you know, it was like a tiny town in New Jersey right on the Delaware River.
Okay.
And there was just nothing to do, really. And arts or, you know, music and stuff was not necessarily a priority in the town and mm-hmm. or at the high school. And, you know, music meant so much to me at the time, and I was starting to play guitar, and there weren't a lot of people running around that were wanting to start bands or anything. And it really put me in a pretty, I felt like I didn't fit in, you know, essentially. Right. I felt really, really on my own, and needed, you know, craved, I guess, some sort of sense of community. And I was also primed for a punk rock situation. I was like a scrawny kid that got bullied a lot, you know, and, you know, I was like a target, you know, so I was sort of angry, sort of pissed and frustrated with the situation and alienated and looking for people that felt the same way that I did. And there weren't a lot of them in my town. And then I went to City Gardens that night, and I was in a room with 1,000 other kids in the exact same situation. And it gave me some hope, you know, it gave me a sense of, community and family.
Definitely.
Hey,
so I was just going to ask when you were starting to play guitar, you were just playing in your bedroom pretty much or something? You didn't have any buddies to get together
for the first
with?
Bunch of years? That's what it was. I was an only child, and so there was nobody else in the house to play with, and I pretty much played along. You know, I had one Ramones tape, Loco Live, and just played along with that. I learned every song on it, which, you know, it was one tape, but the Ramones did everything so quickly. Yeah, there were like
40 songs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like half the repertoire on one tape.
Yeah, totally.
I would just play, you know, just kind of play along and just sort of teach myself how to play these songs that meant so much to me at the time.
So what is it about this tune, I Believe in Miracles, specifically? Are there some lyrics in it? Was it the performance that did they play it that night, and you heard it kind of for the first time, or heard it in a new way night? Or
they did play it that night. No, I think I could have picked any Ramon song and it would have fit the bill for what we're talking about here. But I just like the message, you know, because it looking back, it sort of felt like a miracle that, like, I finally felt a part of something, you know, and the Ramones gave me that.
You know, like, for me, a lot of tunes that I loved, you know, when I was that age, and I still love,
they've almost grown with me. You know what I mean? They've kind of like, they still mean a lot to me, but maybe they mean something a little bit different. When you hear this tune now, does it apply to your life in a different way kind of now? Or does it take you back to that time a little bit? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it continues to give me hope, the same sort of hope that it gave me back then, but in different context through, yeah. I mean, like, look at what we're living in, you know, right now.
Totally. I mean, everything takes on a new meaning now.
Yeah. Everything takes on a new meaning now. And this is, you know, this is a tune that, you know, this is just as relevant. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody would say that Joey or Johnny Ramone were like Bob Dylan level lyricists or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some people to make that argument. It's like, you know, it's like comparing apples to oranges a little bit. But
yeah,
to put pen to paper and change the world, I think they both did it in different ways.
Yeah, well, they did do that, and they nailed it with this one. That this is a timeless. It's sort of a timeless. Message, yeah. I guess.
Well, I'd love to hear you play it. You down to play it for us?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
All right,
cool. I'll count it off just like they did then.
Yeah, perfect.
Because they would always count off tunes live that had nothing to do with the tempo that they played them at then. You know,
it was just, you know, before you start, I got, you know, that like the last show they played or whatever, was it at the Whiskey or something like, and when Lemmy plays with them and he counts it off and does the same thing.
Oh yeah, it's perfect. You have to. I mean, it's like, you know, you got to show a little respect here. Come on.
Yeah. Well, let's hear it, man.
Right. 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's great.
Oh yeah.
Stuff like that, does it just take you back, like you feel like a kid again when you play stuff like that?
Oh yeah, 100%.
It's the best, man.
You know,
I won't speak to you, but like I don't get to do that enough. I love like every now and then just pulling out random tunes like that at shows, and
Oh, it's the best. Or not even at shows, you know?
Like, well, you know what I mean, but just like in any opportunity that you can.
Yeah, absolutely. No, well, whenever I buy a new amp, you know you're a guitar player. If you get an amp, you have to break in the speaker. Like buying an amp, right? It's like buying a new pair of boots. It's like you put on the boots and they're super uncomfortable and you got to break them in, right? So a speaker and an amp is the same thing. And, the experts say, you got to put in about 10 hours of like really high volume playing. And that's my song to break in any new amp that I get. I go down to my rehearsal space and I jump around like I'm 16 years old for like, 4 hours at a time, just playing that on a loop. And it's,
hell yeah.
I mean, I feel like I'm 16 years old again, you know?
Yeah, that's great. That's what it's all
about.
Beautiful
thing. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. You know?
The power of music, man. That's awesome.
I'll tell you what.
Well, cool. I love that. What about next? What do you got next? What's the next tune that sort of popped
Well,
in
moving
your head?
On down the timeline of my life, I chose George Jones, a song called "Don't Stop the Music."
Oh yeah.
Okay, and I chose this song because I'd say in about my mid-20s or so, things got a little confusing, and I'd say that I sort of got off track. Things had gotten to the point in my mid-20s where I decided one of two things needed to happen, were going to happen, and that was, one was that I was going to stop drinking. That would be, behind door number one. And behind door number two, something really bad was going to happen eventually, because things had sort of gotten off track. And this song was really what I related to when things were really bad. I sort of like looked to this song to get me through a lot of very, very uncertain times. Because things were bleak for me, frankly.
And you were aware, in the moment that you had, door one and door number two?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. It became, things started to happen where there were sort of telltale signs that, hey, man, if you don't make some serious decisions in terms of starting to take better care of yourself and taking better care of the people around you, there's going to be dire consequences. And when I was in the throes of a lot of that, all I really had was, it's not so dramatic, but really all I had was music to help me out. And this song,
I don't think it sounds dramatic, man. I think a lot of people feel that. I know I've felt that way before for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it got to a point where, I would say that, other than recently getting engaged, I think that for me stopping
congratulations
drinking,
by the way,
well, right back at you, yeah, thanks, man. Takes one to know one. Stopping drinking was the best decision I've ever made. Because I mean there's just a laundry list of reasons, and I wake up every day, that was 13 years ago.
That's awesome
now,
man.
And I really feel for people because I see them, we're in a business where you go out and you entertain people and you're out with, the masses, and people tend to go big at concerts, and I see them and I really, I feel so grateful for all the gifts that decision over those 13 years have given me, and who knows what's more to come. There's no end in sight. But this song really got me through. This song got me through some really, really tough, frankly, dark times.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. George Jones, somebody who is very well known for drinking.
Well, there's that great story, right, where he was driving home drunk, and his local law enforcement people pulled him over, but they were such big fans, they were like, look, George, what we're going to do is we're not going to arrest you, we'll drive you home, and then we're going to drive your car into town and you can come down tomorrow and pick it up once you've sobered up. Uh-huh. And they dropped him off at his house and he sort of like waved goodbye and said, oh, thanks, you know, thanks, fellas. That's so nice of you. And as soon as they were out of eyeshot, he got on his tractor and drove that into town to the bar, which is super punk rock. I mean, the guy was, you know, the guy was, he was the real thing, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. So, with this tune again, you know, it was the lyrics, the vibe of it. What about it specifically?
Yeah, well, you'll hear. I mean, it's a very desperate plea to that all the guy wants to hear is this one song that he's just been listening to all night, and and they're trying to close out the bar, and you know, and he's got all these problems and this, that, the other, and they're saying, you know, it's time to go home, and he's like, he's saying, please, just don't stop the music.
You know? Yeah. And well, let's hear it and then maybe we chat about it a bit more. I'd love to hear it.
Let's see what we can do. Don't stop the music, let it play one more song. The same one that's played tonight for so long. She's out with another, I saw them tonight. Sitting there close together, she knows that's not right. So don't stop the music, let it play one more song. The same one that's played tonight for so long. My pockets are empty, I've spent my last dime, but I just got to hear that song one more time. Don't be mad at me, mister, I know that it's wrong, but I want you. So don't stop the music, don't make me go home. 'Cause I know she's not there, and I'll cry all night long. Don't stop the music, let it play one more song. The same one that's played tonight for so long. My pockets are empty, I've spent my last time, but I just got to hear that song one more time. Yeah, I just got to hear that song one more time. Yeah, man, that is a unbelievable song.
He's got that ability to like write tunes. I mean, he probably played gigs where that guy was at the show. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Like, but to play shows where that guy's at the show and be that guy at the same time, you know, something pretty unique to him, I would suppose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of his stuff, you know, when you get into the repertoire, all of it, there's a whole phase where just all of it was like, basically like, help me.
Yeah,
you know what I
totally.
Mean? That's the underlying message for a whole part
no
of
doubt.
His career.
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, when you say that song, you know, helped you get through that time and you were thinking about these two choices you had to make, where were you kind of when you were hearing that song? 'Cause you weren't out and about, nobody's listening to that tune probably at that time. And you know, in a bar, right. You're kind of at home listening to that song.
There were,
in a car.
Well, no, I mean, you know, you're talking about, I'm talking about my early 20s here.
Mm-hmm.
Was this whole phase of sort of where things got pretty abstract and, you know, that was a time when I was on the road a lot with a band that I was in then called Rana. And, you know, this was at a time of CD players, you know, CD players in the van and mm-hmm. get wasted on a gig and, you know, just play that song as loud as the stereo, but probably driving the other guys in the band.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely nuts. But there were a few, you know, I've got a few memories of finding that song on jukeboxes here and there. And I was that guy who, you know, put $10 into the jukebox and just hit that song, you know, a bunch of times, which is
amazing.
So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's awesome. But I'll tell you, if I
no,
saw,
but I mean, it's awesome that it helped get you through is what
yes,
I mean.
Yes. Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. I mean, if I saw that kid now, I would just feel really, I'd be like, man, what a confused dude over there.
I know, but you got to figure it out on your own so many times, you know, like,
oh yeah. No, listen, I don't regret for one second having gone through what I went through. And there was just something about that song that it's like, whatever you do, you know, it's like, I just need to like the power of being able to sort of disappear from the harsh realities sometimes into music, you know, which I think has been said in a million different ways in a million different songs. And for whatever reason, this one was the one that connected with me.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful, man. I love that little intro you picked over it too. That was really nice.
Oh yeah. I doubt George Jones would approve of sharp 11 chords in his intro to one of his tunes.
Well, I dug it. It was good. Well, cool. How about one more?
Yeah. Yeah, the third one sort of represents, I chose Richard Thompson, Vincent Black Lightning, 1952 is the third song here.
I've heard you play that song, man. You do that tune justice. I'd love to hear why you love it so much.
Well, you know, right after I decided to change a lot of, to make some big changes in my life, When I changed a lot of behaviors, I sort of stopped touring for a while because I basically just like had to take a minute and hit the life reset button and sort of learn how to, you know, just like tie my fucking shoes in the morning, you know, again, like just kind of had to redo everything. And I took some time off from touring. And when I did decide to start, because honestly, I didn't know if I could even still be a musician. You know, I didn't know if I could live this lifestyle and be in clubs and around all the things that musicians have to be around.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did decide that I wanted to start playing again and see how touring felt, I decided that I would only do it with people that I was very, very comfortable with. And the first tour that I did was with a guy, a friend of mine named Chris Hartford. And it was in his band and we were opening, I believe we were opening... I think that tour was opening for Joe and Marco in the duo. And I think Joe was doing double duty with us. So this would have been about 2007 or so.
So and you knew Joe from before this?
I did. Yeah. We had met years before.
Cool.
And so the band was me, Chris, Dave Dryowitz, and Joe. And we drove.
I had no idea that all of you guys went back that far, really.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, it all goes back to that small town in Jersey that I grew up in, mm-hmm. really, because the small town that I grew up in is right across the river from where the Ween guys live or from.
Okay.
And and Dave played in Ween, and Chris was the guy who actually, you know, you'd have to ask him for the details, but he helped Ween initially get signed, I believe, way back in the day. And I knew Chris and all those guys from the late 90s. So when I decided that, you know, like maybe I can do this music thing, but I just want to dip my big toe back in and just see how it feels. I was keeping it very much like keep it in the family, and just stay in safe places. And Chris, Chris was going on this tour and I went out with him, and it was pretty, I think it was a couple of weeks long. And on that run he gave me a Richard Thompson CD. Again, another big life moment. I remember it like it was last week. Chris gave me, we were driving out of Burlington, Vermont, and we stopped at a record store and we got back into the van, and Chris gave me a copy of Richard Thompson. It's Richard and Linda Thompson, I Want to See the Bright Lights Tonight. And and he said, I got this for you, you know. And that record became like super, super important to me. I know every note of that record. It's a perfect record too. Mm-hmm. Like Richard and Linda Thompson, I Want to See the Bright Lights Tonight. If you've never heard it, use this time to, you know, that you're stuck inside to like check it out. Cause yeah, it is, it's sort of an under the radar classic. And so that record got me very interested in Richard Thompson's guitar playing. And I started researching his solo career. And of course, the minute you start to scratch the surface of Richard Thompson, the very first thing that comes up is Vincent Black Lightning. You know, it's sort of his, I don't know, his big hit, I guess you'd say. And that song, there's some songs that you listen to and it's, they're so good that it's like watching a Martin Scorsese movie. You know, like you just feel everything about the song, and this is one of those songs. And it also gave me, because I really, you know, I needed something to keep my mind occupied at this point in my life, because there was a lot of sort of uncertainty and a lot of, you know, I had just, I was trying to, like I said, I was trying to like sort of hit the reset button. And the song, the way the song was written, the performance of the song, and what it takes to play on the guitar all at the same time is at such a high level. I knew immediately that this would be a long-term project for me. You know what I mean? Because I literally had no idea how to approach it when I first started. I was like, I don't know how he's doing this. And it involved learning a whole picking technique of like hybrid picking. And I worked on it for months.
Had you dabbled in that before a little bit? Or
none.
Never. That was the first thing. That's a hefty one to dive into. Yeah.
Oh man. I mean, I played this. I mean, here, you know, here, I'll tune up the guitar here, but I mean, I spent, you know, months playing, like just first, just being able to do this, and then like, you know, you know, just like that.
Totally.
I mean, months, man, you know? And
I know. I mean, for me, it was Chet Atkins, the first like thing that I dabbled in. And it's that same thing, like trying to get your thumb to do one thing and your fingers to do another thing.
Right.
It's like,
right. It's a whole
different world.
It's a whole thing.
And when you go, especially like, I mean, I started, you know, like you kind of in the punk rock, the Ramones thing. It's about as far from that as you could possibly get on the guitar.
It really is. It's true. It's really true. And you're essentially playing a bass line, a melody, and chords all at the same time, and then you're doing vocals over top of it.
That's the crazy part. Yeah. You know?
And I mean, Richard Thompson is, you know, so I found that, and then Richard Thompson just became the new addiction. You know, Richard Thompson became like, oh my God, this guy, he was the guiding light. You know, I mean, I've made jokes with my friends, you know, Richard Thompson, part of his sort of brand is that he wears a beret. And I've said, in those years, I was one step away from going online and buying a beret, you know.
Well, I'm glad you didn't climb that last
step. I am
step,
too.
Scott.
Thanks. Yeah. Now I'm glad I cut it off where I did.
I mean, it's not too late, but you know.
You never know, right? Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
But,
well, you know. I mean, how long do you think that you spent on it until you were the first time you felt like, yeah, I can play this?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, tens of hours.
Yeah.
You know, for sure, to get it at a point where I was satisfied that it wasn't just phoning it in, you know?
To get a piece of music like that, to be able to play it and, like, feel it rather than just, like, barely trying to skate by is a totally different thing.
Right. Because there's different, you know, there's different phases of learning a song or learning music, you know. It's like first you learn like the technical side of it, and then you have to make that sort of just part of you so that it's just, so it's just falling out.
Yeah, you know? Learning to forget it. You know?
Learning to forget it, right. And then then there's like the lifelong challenge of making it something that's going to resonate with people that are hearing it,
you know?
And that's a whole other thing, you know, that has nothing to do with what you're playing, really. Yeah. It has to do with some, you know, that's the X factor, right? That's that intangible thing.
So having that project kind of, you know, taking it back to that time in your life that gave you like a beautiful distraction, almost in a sense, kind of, is that?
Exactly. That's very well put. Yeah. I mean, I needed something to occupy, you know, my distressed mind. 'Cause those were not easy years. I was wrestling with a lot of, guilt with myself, frankly, a lot of disappointment with myself, mm-hmm. a lot of disbelief that I'd let things get as far as I had. It was fucking rough, man. And to have something that I could just dive into that really at the beginning, I was like, I just don't know how to do this. I do not know how to do this. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to have that for just months and months of, focusing on it.
What a good way. I mean, 'cause that guilt thing is such a, I feel like so many people, I feel like that's such a universal feeling that a lot of people don't talk about, you know, that feeling of guilt and shame over, you know, whatever it is in your life. And then having something like this that seems unattainable and being able to get it just had to increase your feeling of self-worth and all of that, you know? And
yeah,
I mean, beautiful to be able to do it. I'd love to hear you play the song.
Yeah,
and I mean, I love your version of it.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, let's see what we can do here. Says Red Molly to James, that's a fine motorbike. Old girl could feel special on many such like. Says James to Red Molly, my hat's off to you. It's a Vincent Black Lightning 1952. And I've seen you on the corners in the cafes, it seems. Red hair and black leather, my favorite color scheme. And he pulls her on behind and down to Book's Hill they ride. Says James to Red Molly, is a ring for your right hand. I'll tell you in earnest, I'm a dangerous man. I've run from the law since I was 17. Yeah, I've robbed many a man to get my Vincent machine. And now I'm 21 years, I might be 22. And I don't mind dying for the love of you. But if fate should break my stride, then I'd give you my Vincent to Come down, Red Molly, to his dying bed.
outside. When she came to the hospital, there wasn't much left. He was running out of road, he was running out of breath. But he smiled to see her cry. He gave her his Vincent's to ride. Says James, in my opinion, there's nothing in this world beats a Vincent Black Lightning red-headed girl. No Hollies and Indians and Triumphs won't do. Now they don't have a soul like a Vincent 52. And he reached for hands and he slipped her the keys. Said, I've got no further use for these. I see angels and aerials in leather and chrome swooping down from the heavens to carry me home. And he gave her one last kiss and died. And he gave her his Vincent's to
And that's so good. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
That is one that I've done a lot over the years by myself, and have done it a few times in public, you know, recently. And, you know, we were talking about songs that take on different meanings over the years. You know, we both knew Neil Casal.
Yeah.
And that was something that we had both talked about, you know, was that Richard Thompson in general and that song in particular. And, you know, at the tribute for him at the Cap.
Yeah.
Recently I played that, and I'll tell you, I've never been through a performance that was, I was so glad when the song was over that I had made it through and been able to do it without falling apart. Cause, man, like when I learned that song in 2008, 2007, when I was trying to get it together, you know, who would have thunk that I'd be playing it under the circumstances, you know, that we lost a friend and you know, playing it for him and so soon, you know.
I mean, it's always evolving music. That's what's so great about it, you know, and it gets you through those hard times and brings people together. And I mean, what a fitting tribute, you know, Neil. To be able to play a song like that is one of those things that made a guy like Neil so happy, you know. So I'm sure that's a beautiful tribute.
We'd always say it wasn't fair. Like with Richard Thompson, it was just like not fair, you know, the triple threat, like the songwriter, guitar player, singer, the whole thing, you know.
At that level, it's really something.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, my folks took me to see Richard Thompson when I was young, when I was in about the ninth grade, eighth or ninth grade, and I hated it.
Solo or with the band?
Yeah, it was solo. It was a double bill. He was just on him tour and his beret. Just him and his beret. him and Roger McGuinn.
From
the Birds. Yeah, yeah. And he was hilarious, man. Like, another thing about Richard Thompson is that he has the best banter in the biz, you know. And somebody had put a request list on stage when he came out and taped a $20 bill to it. And he came out and he looked at it and he took the $20 off and he said, oh, you know, he's English, you know, he's like, oh, yeah. 20 spot. He's like, oh, thank you very much. And then he just crumpled up the request thing and threw it over his shoulder. You know, English humor is the best.
Man. Oh, that's so good.
So fun. So fun.
Well, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you joining me today and sharing all that with us and those great performances. You know, in the future, stay tuned to Scott's Instagram page for further updates. And I really hope, and I'm sure a whole lot of other people hope to see out on the road and playing real soon, man. So,
yeah, likewise, everybody be safe right now. And, you know, hopefully we'll be through this before you know it and back to business as usual.
No doubt. Well, take care, man. And I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
All right.